On Death, Sex, and Money, we feature interviews with you, our community of listeners, getting honest about uncomfortable things.
I developed an illness where it isn't safe for me to drive. A friend once said to me, "Sex is like air. You don't think about it until you're not getting enough." This is a similar sort of thing if you just replace sex with driving.
Listen to Death, Sex, and Money wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, January 26th, the Shoplifting Snitch edition. I'm Zach Rosen. I make another podcast called The Best Advice Show, and I'm dad to Noah, who's 5, and Ami, who's 2. We live in Detroit.
I'm Jamila Lemieux, a writer and contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding Parenting column. I'm mom to Naima, who is 9 3/4, and we live in Los Angeles.
And I'm Carvel Wallace, a writer and podcaster based in Oakland, California, and also the new co-host of Slate's How To. And I'm the father to Georgia, who is 17, and Ezra, who is 19.
Welcome
back to the show, Carvel.
Happy to be here. Those words just came tumbling out automatically like they lived in my soul.
Yeah, they never leave.
They never leave.
Carvel was my predecessor on Mom and Dad Are Fighting. I replaced him. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to think, because that was 2018, I believe.
Might have been 18.
Yeah. I think it was 2018.
I don't know what time is. Like, why are you putting me in the spot trying to figure out time? I can't do that. That's beyond my skill set. Every day is one day. That's all I know.
One day at a time.
One day at a time.
One day at a time. And on this day, we've got an interesting question about a group of freshman girls who won't stop shoplifting makeup.
Uh-oh.
Our letter writer is mulling over if she should let their parents know or if she should just keep quiet. Then, if you're sticking around for Slate Plus, we're going to dive into the great sleepover divide. Here's what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus.
Jamila said it before, there's this weird like letting go that is the long game of parenting. It's like you let go of the rope piece by piece, bit by bit. And sometimes the moment of letting go is like you're afraid and you're not sure about it, but you still do it. And I did that with my kids. I don't know if it was always the right decision. I mean, Ezra told me recently that when I sent him to a sleepover one time at this kid's house, they all snuck out. They were like in fourth grade. They all snuck out and went to Jack in the Box at like midnight, which is like way. And I just was like, you and your dumb friends were like wandering around in the middle of the night. You know what I mean? Like, that's a terrifying thing. But the thing is, when I look at my own childhood, I was doing all kinds of stuff that if my parents knew I was up to, they would be terrified. That's part of the thing of it.
Being a Slate Plus member means that you get a bonus segment from us each week, unlimited access to the Slate website, and perhaps best of all, zero ad interruptions. You can sign up for Slate Plus now at slate.com/momanddadplus. Okay, we're going to dive into our triumphs and fails of the week, but not before a quick break. See you back here in a second.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, we're back. Carvel, would you like to go first?
Yes, I'm going to go with a fail because they're so much more interesting than triumphs. This has happened a few months ago. As some of you may know, my son Ezra has graduated from high school and moved to New York City. He's not in college. He just decided to move to New York City, saved up a bunch of money from his various jobs, and he decided to go there and just take a crack at life. He doesn't really have a plan. He's got some subsidized housing through a family friend for now, and he's just out there doing it. And it's terrifying, but I also, you know, what are you going to do? Like, I'm happy for him. So, I was out there visiting a couple months ago, and he's living in this apartment, and he's got nothing. His cans of beans are on the floor. I mean, he's living, like a 19-year-old living on his own. So at some point, I said, I developed this plan that I was going to like take him shopping at IKEA and at the grocery store, and I was going to do this big thing where I was going to set up his whole space for him. And I had been at IKEA the day before, and I was like, picked out some shelves, and oh, this will be good for the thing, and this will be good for a pantry. I had this whole vision. So I told him, yeah, tomorrow, son, like, leave your day clear. You and me are going to go to IKEA, and we're going to go to the grocery store. We're going to get everything done. It's going to be this thing. And he's like, okay, Dad, sure. And I have this vision in my mind that it's going to be this great day of, like, father-son bonding, setting up. Mm-hmm. We're putting together lamps. We're putting together dressers. We're laughing. We're bonding. And all of my excitement, I failed to notice that he was kind of like resistant and maybe even a little quiet about stuff. He just wasn't as excited as I thought he was. And so finally, at some point, we got to these little IKEA carts that were like $19 a pop that I just knew up and down were going to be like the key to making his whole kitchen work. And I was feeling so proud. You know, I've lived on my own since I was 17 years old. Okay, I'm 48. And so I have a lot of pride in my ability to be like a functioning adult. Like, you know, even when the kids were little, I was a stay-at-home dad. I ran the kitchen. Like, I'm like Mr. Homemaker, and I have all this pride in it. And I was just so excited to pass this on to my son, you know? And so I didn't notice that he was kind of resistant. And so when I whipped out the plan about these IKEA, like, sort of rolling cart things that he could use as a pantry, he was just like, well, why do I need those? And I'm like, because you do. And he's like, but why? And this like little fight started, and it turned into this big fight. And I could not figure out why this kid was like mad at me. Like, I'm paying for everything. I'm sharing all this knowledge. Like, what is it? Mm-hmm. And we're like, the tensions are getting high, and we haven't fought in a long time, because at a certain point, I just started treating him like, you're an adult. Like, I'm not going to fight with you anymore. Like, you know what I mean? You're not 14. Like, I'm not trying to get you to do your homework anymore, and you're on your own. So like, it felt a little bit weird to be in like conflict with what is kind of this grown man at this point. And then at some point he just said, Dad, you never even asked me if I wanted to do this. Like, you never even asked me. And I was like, oh my God, he's right. Like, I never even asked him. He was like, you can't talk to me like this. I'm not a child. And of course, in my mind, I'm like, of course you're a child. You're just a baby, a newborn babe out there in the world. But what I realized in that moment is that he was right. I had come with this whole vision that was just like based on me being in charge, domination, control. Here's what I'm going to do. You just step back. Dad's going to handle everything. And that he wasn't there for that. And he wanted to collaborate. And that's why he was getting mad at me. And he just said it like straight, like, you can't talk to me that way. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. I can't. I'm so sorry. Like, my bad, you know? And then after that, it was cool. Like, we went, got the stuff. He turned out he was really into the IKEA trays. He was like, these are actually really helpful. And we had like a normal thing, but it was just, I really fell into the trap of just like sliding into this dude's life and trying to like dominate and control and manage it, because I felt that I had all this wisdom and he needed it. Parenting kids who are adults is different than parenting little kids. That's all.
Once you gave each other permission to proceed as you were, like, did you still come at it with like, oh, you should get this thing for the kitchen? Or were you more open to like, what do you think you should have to organize your spatulas?
Well, what's interesting is that he changed. Like, he was more open to it because he felt like he was willing to hear it. The thing I've really been impressed with him that he can do that I can't is he can change his attitude on a dime. Like, I get stubborn and stuck in something. Mm. And so if my ego's hurt, I'm going to be, even if I know you're right, I'm still going to grump around for a good little while before I finally come through. And he can just say what's on his mind. And if he feels like it's been heard, he'll drop it. And that's what he did in that conversation. Like, he was all tense and weird and conflictual. And then finally he said what he needed to say. I heard it. I acknowledged it. And then he was done. Like, it was no more conflict. It was like, okay, so what do you think I should get? You know, I don't know. It just like changed the whole vibe. It's like he just needed to be acknowledged in this particular way. And to his credit, he advocated for that acknowledgement so clearly.
He's growing up.
Parenting from babyhood is like stepping back slowly, you know, like stepping further and further back. And it is a terrifying act. I'm sitting here ready to have an anxiety attack. Just the idea of my daughter being 19. I really have gone through all the ways that I'm not prepared for it. And, you know, God.
Yeah. It's really scary.
You.
Yeah.
Will he just call you and check in?
Yeah, he does call me. He calls me a lot because he needs help with a lot of things. Like, how do I fill out this 1099? Just what should I do with this chicken? Is this chicken still good? It was frozen and then it wasn't frozen. Now, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And so he does call me for advice a lot. And we have a standing Sunday phone call that we always do. That's where we just like freeform. He just goes off on whatever he's thinking about. And we talk about just whatever stuff. And it's really nice. It's like really nice right now.
By the way, 1099s and chicken, I still don't know what the fuck I'm doing with either of those.
They're such adult things. How would you know that? How would you know what to do with
how
those
would
things?
I know? Jamila, how about you? What went on this week?
So I think I mentioned in the last episode that I've been having a bit of a tough time. And got some very kind emails from listeners. Thank you. You are always so sweet. But one of the challenges that I'd been having prior to Thursday the 12th was that I wasn't writing on a regular basis. As you all know, I'm working on a book, and I'd had like a hardcore month of between the holidays and just kind of writer's block, you know, like just not writing. It was bad, you know, like my deadline is this summer and I've got a lot of it done. So it's not, you know, that I'm necessarily off, but, you know, this book is a living, breathing thing that has to be delivered by a certain time and I need to be consistent with it. You know, I understand that not every writing day is going to be a good writing day, but more often than not, I should be writing. And I just was not writing and not writing, you know, much else either, aside from the column I do for Karen Feeding, which I've been consistent with since 2018, and I'm proud of that. But anyway, on the 12th, I started this ritual that I've used in the past of meditating and then journaling and then writing, and I wrote 1,400 words, and the next day I wrote 1,500, and since then, I have written every working day, with the exception of Monday the 16th, because my daughter was off of school. But I've written every day, whether it was for the book or an article. And I've written an article for another publication. I did a freelance piece, and I hadn't been doing those very often. I need to be doing them more often now. But I was trying to be committed to the book. And I wrote my Slate column for this week early, and I wrote some jokes, and I just wrote. And so I feel good as a writer right now. Like, I feel like I'm in it. And that's really significant because for a while I was not, and it was very scary. And then, like, the act of getting back on the horse becomes so anxiety-inducing, you know, and just goes on and on. But I think I'm back.
That's awesome. Yeah. Nice work.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I super relate to that. It is really hard, especially after a long period of not writing, to get back on. Like, every time I don't write for like a couple of days, a week or so, I start writing and I'm like, wait, what are words? Like, how do you write? What's a sentence? I have no idea what's going on. It's so stressful. So I really feel that struggle. And I think you're doing, first of all, when I was writing my book, which is still in edits, but I was told by everyone I knew that no one turns their book in on time.
Yeah.
And I can't figure out if that was, if I needed to hear that or if I didn't need to hear that because.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely not. July does not represent on time, by the way, of where okay, the okay. book was there originally due. This is okay, the new deadline. This go. Is the deadline that mama has to make.
That's so what I like
can
to
get
hear.
Her check.
Okay. Okay. Know. Right. Yeah. That because that becomes the other thing is that you don't get the check and now you're out here broke. And then you have to keep taking, this is what happened to me. And then I had to keep taking freelance articles that I was like kind of so-so on because I needed to keep the lights on, which then got in the way of me writing the book and it becomes this cycle. So I'm there with you. That's all I got to say about that.
Thank you.
I have a little triumph in the wake of a bit of a failure. As our listeners know, Ami, especially my two-year-old, but Noah even sometimes too, has trouble sleeping. And last night was one of those nights where it was like, Noah was up at 12:30 and then Ami was up at 1:30 and then Noah was up at 2:30. They were just trading off being a pain in the butt,
yikes,
you know? And fortunately, neither of them were sick. They just like weren't sleeping well. We've gotten back into not a great habit of Ami will, he can like sleep till 4:00 and then we go in there when he starts crying and he like won't let us leave. Aww. He's like, lay down. And it's so cute and he's so cuddly. And then if we try to leave, he'll just like wake right back up. So like one of us is like sleeping in there with him from 4 to 7, which isn't great for his sleep training, but it's kind of nice. So it was a pretty sleepless night. I read some Carvel Wallace archival work when I couldn't go back to sleep. And then finally this morning, Noah woke up like an hour before she usually does. And often when she wakes up before Shira and I are up, she will like come in and ask for the TV or for the iPad. And if we're too exhausted, we sometimes let her do it. But this morning I was like, no, if you want to be up right now, you can go and read in your room. And she did. Mm. She went and turned her lamp on. She went to the bathroom by herself and she was reading, looking at her books. She's, she can identify letters. So there was the triumph in her actually going and heeding that call to not watch the iPad, but actually, you know, just entertain herself, which she also has a hard time with, but is getting better at. And then also, she was like, when I did get up, she's like, I want to actually learn how to read. I don't want to just do picture books. So that was exciting too, that she's like jazzed about learning to read. And so it kind of made the sleepless night a little bit better, you know, having watched her make that leap of maturity, which was really the first time I think that she's done that. So
It's amazing how many of the triumphs that we have in the show are just like my kid agreed to do something. The kid just
my kid agreed to let me shop for furniture with him.
To my will.
They're in charge.
Yes. Well, on that note, we're going to take another quick break. See you back here in a minute. We are back and ready to hear our listener question, which is being read by the wonderful Shasha Leonard.
Dear Mom and Dad, my high school freshman daughter told me that two of her friends like to shoplift items from Sephora. They will go in a group or alone and walk out with things they didn't pay for. They justify it by saying the company makes so much money, they won't miss the items they take anyway. One family is upper middle class, the other more well off. So essentially, neither kid needs to steal. My daughter told the girls they need to stop. What if they get caught? Don't they feel guilty, etc.? But that hasn't changed anything. I know the moms from an after-school activity. We are friendly, but not friends. If my kid was stealing, I would want to know. But a big part of me thinks that this is going to turn into a shoot the messenger situation if I say something to the parents. How would you handle this?
All right. my answer is going to suck, but I think you kind of got to stay out of this one. Mm. These uppity heifers will destroy your child socially. It is not worth it. Mm-hmm. I feel like maybe if you were friends with the women, the burning desire to tell my friend, you know, here's what's going on with your daughter might change my answer. And even then I'd say like, but you cannot let them find out that my daughter told you. Like that is incredibly important, you know, like you have to look through her makeup, ask her how she got stuff, follow her to Sephora, whatever you do to bust her, you cannot let my child take the fall for this. Because as much as these girls deserve to be punished, you know, like, and there's some tricky variables. Like, if these are girls of color, like, what getting arrested could mean for them. You know what I mean? Like, so them getting in trouble is kind of a precarious thing. But regardless of their background, while they deserve to be held accountable, I don't think your daughter needs to suffer for that happening. And so unless you know for a fact that you can trust these women not to tell, which you don't because you don't know these people, I think you should stay out of it. I mean, if you really want to be a superhero about this, if you're so pressed, you can try to find a time where they're in Sephora and like just go snitch on them.
Wait, find a time when they're in Sephora and go snitch on them to
Sephora staff.
Ooh, okay.
You know, or just roll up on them. Be like, I know you and I just saw you steal that lipstick, you know?
Just catch them right outside the shop.
In a perfect world, you could just confront the kids yourself. Like, look, I'm not getting in this with your parents for now, but you need to stop. But I mean, whatever, because they might just pay you lip service to your face and keep on stealing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you think,
Carvel? I tend to agree with everything Jamila said. Like, my first thought is like, well, are these white kids or are they not? Because if they are, that's one thing. If like my black daughter and her black friends were shoplifting, I probably would feel like I would want to tell the other parent because like it has the potential to not just be like, kids are being kids. Like this could turn into something that is like real serious for people real quick. Mm-hmm. So I think, and I would expect that other parents of color would appreciate that, you know, but no, Jamila's exactly right. Like this thing where one kid becomes like the snitch in a group and the other parents find out because of one kid, that like the repercussions of that go on forever. And I know this from experience because we had that exact same thing when my kids were in their teens and something was going on and my son mentioned it to me and it was like troubling. So I mentioned it to a parent and then the parent like A, reacted terribly, but B, my son just experienced just years of like everyone being like, you can't fucking tell him anything. He'll fucking tell his dad right away, blah, blah. And I just was like, oh, my bad, son. You know, like my bad. And it was like, it was a safety situation. So I still feel fairly okay about mentioning it, but I did see how that ostracized him for a long time. And yeah, you don't want it, your daughter doesn't deserve that. This is assuming your daughter's not out there shoplifting too, which I, you know, everyone, it's always the other kids. It's never your kid. It might be your kid too. Mm-hmm. I mean, I tend to think that shoplifting in general from like a huge corporation is like, people may kill me for saying this. I don't think it's like the worst thing in the world for a kid to do. It's not ideal, but I also don't think it's like something where there has to be an immediate intervention. I would mostly leave alone. I would tell my daughter, like, if I ever catch you doing this, there's consequences. I'm not leaving that alone. So just be on your guard. But outside of that, like these kids are going to do what they're going to do. And if they end up having to like deal with security and having authorities get involved, then that's kind of on them.
Yeah. I mean, the big factor, like you mentioned, Jamila, is that this parent is not friends with the people. It would be a totally different situation if they were. And also it does seem, of course, we don't know if the daughter's telling the truth, but it seems like your daughter is telling the girls they need to stop. What if they get caught, et cetera, that like, that's a triumph. You know, your kid's not stealing. Your kid is, you know, has a sense of ethics there. So if that's true, then like, I don't know, that's, you're kind of coming out in a good spot there.
And it's good to know that your child, I mean, you know, again, if they're being on the up and up, now you two plant that seed in my head. I'm like, I didn't even think about that. This kid could be in on it, you know? <This kid>. But it's good that your child trusts you to tell you things like this, you know, and hopefully they'll continue to trust you to tell you things that are troubling. And if there is a time where you have to intervene, you simply must intervene. But, you know, better to establish this is a good low hanging fruit, you know, way for you to establish yourself as a safe space without there being a lot at risk here.
Yeah, I want to echo that. That does indicate that like you have a fairly good relationship with your kid, that they would bring this up and they would like you know, have this conversation with you and seek your input and advice on that. Because that's really what it is. And when I say the kid might be in on it, I don't know that the, like, necessarily the ringleader, but, you know, oftentimes my experience with teenagers is that they will tell sort of 80% of the truth, but there'll be a little extra 20% that they keep in the back pocket. And, you know, so like that could be the case here too. So not to suggest that this kid is like secretly some kind of criminal mastermind, but the kid's self-reporting has them as like this angelic figure, like, how dare you in the eyes of the Lord, like steal, you know what I mean? And it's like, maybe it's a little bit more complicated than that, but on the whole, the kid is like trying to do the right thing and is unsure how to handle the situation. And so is the parent. And I think you kind of have to leave it alone and just worry about your own kid and make sure your kid knows that there will be significant consequences if they get further into this.
Pay attention to your child's makeup collection, you know,
yeah.
Just be aware of what's there and, you know, how much you're giving them, if they have an after school job or not, you know, mm-hmm. like how they might be acquiring makeup. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't boost, but there were boys who did in my class, mm-hmm. and I'm pretty sure I got something at some point, you know what I mean? So she might be getting things from them, which I'm also like, that is so not a crime. You know what I mean? Like, just pay attention, because that, you know, that could certainly be a gateway into getting involved with it herself, you know, to just take things and be like, wow, this is what I get from just being a friend of a booster. Imagine if I started taking things myself.
Well, thank you so much for writing in. If you have any advice for our letter writer, we're all ears. Send us a voice memo or email to momanddad@slate.com. And that's it for our show. This episode of Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson and Maura Curry. Alicia Montgomery is VP of Audio at Slate. For Jamila Lemieux and Carvel Wallace, I'm Zach Rosen. Thanks for listening.